from the fourth chapter of Matthew's Gospel, starting at verse 1, concluding at verse 11. Then Jesus was led by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. After fasting 40 days and 40 nights, Jesus was hungry. The tempter came to him and said, "If you are the Son of God, tell these stones to become bread." Jesus answered, "It is written, man shall not live on bread alone, but on every word that comes from the mouth of God." Then the devil took him to the holy city and had him stand on the highest point of the temple. "If you are the Son of God," he said, "throw yourself down. For it is written, he will command his angels concerning you, and they will lift you up in their hands, so that you will not strike your foot against a stone." Jesus answered him, "It is also written, do not put the Lord your God to the test." Again, the devil took him to a very high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their splendor. "All this I will give you," he said, "if you will bow down and worship me." Then Jesus said to him, "Away from me, Satan, for it is written, worship the Lord your God and serve him only." Then the devil left him, and angels came and attended him. The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. So there's a question that I often get, and it's, how old are you anyway? So people often ask, and I know that those that ask represent many more that wonder but don't ask. So I just turned 40 years old a couple weeks ago, and any of us that have a birthday with a zero attached to it, it causes reflection, right? Whether that's 10 years old, 20, 30, 40, maybe there's one or two of you that go above that. It's a big time of reflection. I still remember turning from age 9 to age 10 and thinking how cool it was to be in double digits now. I remember, now I'm a big boy, I'm 10. I remember 20, 30, and now just a few weeks ago. And it causes this time to really reflect upon where you've been and where you are and perhaps where it is God might be leading you into the future. Another thing that happened this week is on social media, and especially Facebook, there's this thing that's going around where you're supposed to post your very first picture ever on Facebook. Has anyone caught this? And so all around the country, people are posting the very first picture that they ever posted on Facebook, and then their most recent picture that they posted on Facebook. And it's the single most embarrassing thing, right? I showed my kids these pictures of my wife and I from about 10 years ago when we joined Facebook, and then one now. And my children looked and they said, "Well, mommy looks the same." Time, experiences. Life can be like this pearl necklace with these individual pearls of experiences, and so often we go searching for the thread that connects them all. When I turned 30, I had just moved from a congregation in Guyana, South America, to a new post in Pietermaritzburg, South Africa. I was in the midst of a 10-year stretch living overseas. I had just gotten married, and I had no children. Every day I wore a t-shirt and flip-flops and shorts. That's not my reality right now. Time, experiences. And perhaps I'm not the only one that has a birthday and you start wondering, who am I really? how am I any different from that boy growing up in central Wisconsin, or that new pastor in Guyana, or that new father in South Africa, or that new dean in Syracuse, New York? Who am I really? I imagine I'm not the only person that's asked that question of themselves. I actually think that that is a key part of what's going on in our scripture for today. The question of identity. Who am I really? Who am I today? And who will I be tomorrow? When we hear this fourth chapter of Matthew's gospel, it often seems very simple and straightforward. First, Jesus is told to turn stones into bread, and then Jesus resists. Then Jesus is told to throw himself off of the top of the temple, and then Jesus resists. And finally, Jesus is told to bow down and acquire earthly power, but once again, Jesus resists. Three temptations, three resistance to that temptation. And the story that often gets passed down through the generations is that the next time you too are tempted to do that which you probably shouldn't do, remember this story from the gospel. I call it the keep your hand out of the cookie jar biblical interpretation. That next time your hand creeps in, remember temptation. And this interpretation of this text is fine. It is good. It has helped me out once or twice. But I would like to believe that this gospel message is more. It is more than just keep your hand out of the cookie jar moralism. It is also about digging deeper into the text and not just being mindful of what we do, but recognizing that what we do is an expression of who we are. And Matthew chapter 4 is meant to spur us and spark us and stir us to be mindful of who we are. And for people of Christian faith, that, of course, is mindful of our baptism. What comes right before Matthew chapter 4, and of course the smart answer is chapter 3. Chapter 3 is the baptism story. The baptism story with that wonderful baptism we celebrated last night with baby Sophie, one of the cutest children I've ever seen. Today is the 6th anniversary of my daughter Toby's baptism. Just a few weeks ago, I celebrated the 40th anniversary of my own baptism. In Matthew chapter 3, Jesus is baptized, and in that text, we remember the heavens opened up, God looks down and says, "You are my son, the beloved, in you I am well pleased." Jesus, this is who you are. This is who you are. It's fascinating that Jesus is about to start his earthly ministry, and God is not providing this instructional manual, a how-to guide to be the Messiah. Jesus is not receiving instructions about how to turn water into wine. Jesus is simply told who he is. It's powerful. I'm reminded of a story when I was a young child. My father gave me a little talking to about some of my homework. He told me about the power of my name and about writing my name on an assignment. He said, every time you write Brian on a homework assignment, that assignment is an expression of who you are. Powerful, right? And he said, Brian, remember though, when you write Brian Conkel, that first name belongs to you, that second name also belongs to me. The power of a name, the power of identity, and how we are called to act in ways that are responses to that identity. So Jesus, moving along from chapter 3 to chapter 4, immediately after receiving his identity, that identity is put to the test. Follow the words here in chapter 4. What does the devil say to Jesus, the tempter? He starts with if. If you are the Son of God. if, command these stones to turn into loaves of bread. If. Prove to me, Jesus, that you are who God says you are. It is Jesus' very identity that is put into question. His identity. Because the tempter, the devil, knows that to question Jesus' identity, to attack his very nature as God's son, the beloved in whom God is well pleased, is the real battle that's taking place. Now, I don't know about you. I feel this battle most days. The if. And how tempting it can be to fall into the if of that temptation. If you'll just look a certain way, act a certain way, guest preach a certain way, then maybe you'll be likable, lovable, and popular and wonderful, right? If you have nice clothes or fancy car, then maybe you'll be acceptable. If you do the right things on the weekends, if you have the newest and greatest cell phone, if, then just maybe, I'll actually be a decent person. And of course, we spend millions upon billions upon trillions of dollars every year trying to purchase our value, right? Or perhaps I'm the only one that feels this way. Some people call it keeping up with the Joneses. I call it resisting temptation. If. And as a result of that, we live through life anxious and stressed, trying to prove that somehow we too are beloved and that we too are acceptable. Whenever this Bible text comes up, I always give my mother a phone call. I called her this morning on my drive over here, and I love to remind her. She used to take pieces of paper, and whenever this Bible verse came up in our church in central Wisconsin, she'd cut it out, and she put it on the door of my bedroom and my brother's bedroom, and of course it says, "You are my son, the beloved. In you I am well pleased." And I remember thinking of the time, "Mommy, that is just so corny. What are you doing? You know, stop. You're embarrassing me." But the older I get, the more brilliant I realize that was. That when you're growing up and so many changes are happening around you, to just know that you're loved exactly as you are. This, I think, is at the core of the gospel. It's the core. And at this core of the gospel, you and I receive both a challenge and we receive comfort. The comfort of this text is, of course, the affirmation that you too are loved. The comfort knowing that you too are acceptable and that you too are loved exactly as you are. Full stop. I hold on to that promise every day. The challenge of the gospel is that not only am I acceptable, but my neighbor is as well. And at a time in which we are so divided in our public discourse, and at a time when it's so easy to simply throw stones at one another, I find it challenging to know that my neighbor is just as beloved as I am. And in the midst of this comfort and in this challenge of the gospel, you and I are set free. And this is at the core of baptism. The freedom that you and I receive to be set free. And when I say freedom, I mean not this idea that we can just do whatever we want to whoever we want, whenever we want. But the freedom that comes from no longer having to work out my own salvation. The freedom from no longer seeing myself at the center of the universe. The freedom, as Martin Luther said, to relieve myself of navel gazing, of just staring at myself and putting the I at the center of everything. To be set free from that temptation and to be set free for our neighbors in service, in sacrifice, and in justice. We are set free from and we are set free for. And this freedom of baptism, nurtured by the comfort and the challenge of the gospel, equips us too in those moments of temptation when we too wonder if we too are beloved and if we too God is well pleased. My hope and my prayer, whether it is this congregation or the students that I'm blessed to interact with each and every day, is that people know that they are beloved, and in them God is well pleased. And that the gospel reminds us that we are accepted exactly as we are, and we never stay the same. That comfort and that challenge provides us fuel to live, to learn, and to lead. So my prayer for this church, my prayer for the students that I accompany each day, and for the world that we are so blessed to be a part of, is that we will be set free this day. So that in our moment of temptation, what we do is an expression of who we are. And so that God, too, will be well pleased. Thank you for the opportunity to be with you. God bless you. Amen.